Tax season has arrived, and doing taxes without the right help can feel overwhelming. Intuit TurboTax is here now to guide you through it with confidence. Match with a TurboTax full-service expert who handles everything for you from start to finish. Your dedicated expert checks every single deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And the best part? You'll see real-time updates on your expert's progress right on your phone while you live your life. Plus, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax full service experts. Real-time updates only on iOS mobile app.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow Legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Carousel in the Ravine.
G'day, Forrest.
G'day, sir. Well, if that bit of theater hadn't tipped you off, we are heading down under this evening. Are you going to be speaking in a Australian accent for the whole thing?
No, I'm not, because my best Australian accent is based on Paul Hogan, who I believe is like 93 now, and I haven't heard it in 25 years. So, no, I'm gonna skip it.
Well, here's a tip. Somebody had told me is that you just add an I after an A sound, so like a snake would be snike.
Okay.
So there you go. Just do that for everything.
That's good
and
to
you're
know.
You will be totally undetectable and fit right in. But this story, though, reminds us of a few other ones that we've covered, but why don't you introduce it?
This is a lot of fun. You know, these Astonishing Dead Letters, they're coming in to us from all over the world, which is awesome. Thank you so much for sending them in. Tonight is no exception. This was sent in by listener Fiona, who lives with her husband, Greg, not too far away from what the locals in Australia call prom country.
Indeed, but owing to the differences in the Queen's English and the Queensland English, and us, you'd think maybe it was a lot about dances or
high school dances,
promenades,
or proms,
dances. Yeah. And no, but knowing better, there's a lot of abbreviations for different things that that they call. This would be for an abbreviation of what's called the Wilson's Promontory, which is the southernmost point of the Australian mainland. And we'll tell you what, we haven't been there, but after some cursory research online, what we've seen is that it's easily one of the most beautiful places on the planet.
Yeah, it is just stunning. And I've always heard that everything in Australia was trying to kill you, wildlife
that's true.
That is.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine death lurking in every bush and boot in this particular part of the country.
But talking about, this is an area too, like what we're talking about here, where we've got a lot of stories from it. We've covered Australia quite a bit, but maybe there is something about Melbourne that's especially strange. And this region, though, you'll remember because we most prominently discussed this in our three-part series for the main show on pilot Frederick Valentich from 2021. And this was one of the most famous aviation mysteries in the world about this man, Frederick, or Fred, who reported a strange craft in the air while he was aloft in a Cessna just before he vanished with some strange circumstances. And neither he nor his plane have ever been found. And coincidentally, it's interesting that we have this in our notes because we just got, I think it came in on Sunday, but an email from listener Vic Bongiorno. He sent us a letter and he says, my name is Victor Bongiorno. I'm a retired an Australian commercial pilot who spent more than 25 years flying the Bass Strait and Cape Otway region of Victoria, the same airspace as Frederick Valentich in 1978. And he's written a book called Frederick Valentich Double Dark, which re-examines the whole case from the point of view of a commercial pilot.
Oh.
Yeah, so we might be in touch. Anyway, just want to give a shout out because we do try to get to most every email and message that comes to us. It may take a while, as you know.
This story, tonight's story, came to us 2 years ago. So just if that gives you an idea.
Well,
that's not always the case, though.
About this before. So I don't know if this is my own personal Mandela effect going on, but as you'll hear tonight when I read the story, there's something very familiar about it. So it's just odd. Yeah. There's a lot of odd things about this. On the surface, it's beautiful. You start mucking around in the bush, you could get bitten by something deadly.
This area is just gorgeous, too. It's a lot more lush than like the outback and other places we've talked about in the past. And that sets the stage for Fiona and Greg's dead letter tonight.
Right, right.
As we said, they live near the absolute southernmost tip of the Australian mainland. Mm-hmm. It's an area known for very dense, ancient fern gullies, steep granite mountains, and thick, unforgiving coastal bush. It's the perfect stage for this story.
Yeah, the stage has a very strange, I guess you could call it a set piece to it, a glowing, impossible structure hovering over a 10-meter drop, around a little over 30 feet.
Yeah,
and when I say impossible, I mean something that should not be there.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. Because this thing is also defying gravity and logic. But the mind, as we know, tries to make sense of the impossible, doesn't it? It desperately grabs the nearest familiar concept that's in our brains and it's available. Even if that concept is something strangely out of place, as like something like a carnival ride, another visual idea that we've now come across numerous times over the years.
Yeah, the brain is a funny thing when confronted with extreme ontological shock. Does it fight? Does it flee? Or does it just turn off? That's the other thing that happens in this story. There's a sudden loss of interest and perhaps some missing time. It's a classic hallmark of high strangeness. But to get the full picture of this bizarre Australian night, we need to hear the details from the source. Forrest, do you have the letter?
Indeed I do. My name is Fiona, and I would like to share a story with you about an experience that my husband Greg and I had a few months back. To preface my story, it is important to note that Greg and I have been listening to your podcast for the past 4 years and have pretty much caught up on almost all your earlier episodes. We particularly remember an episode where you discussed the disappearance of two young girls on their rural property, and the girls see a carousel in a field and have an abduction experience. The carousel is important to note for my story. Greg and I live in Australia, about a 90-minute drive south of Melbourne, not too far from the southernmost point of the Australian mainland. We live on 3 acres in a rural area with bushland and two creeks that meet in a steep ravine running alongside a rear boundary of our property. My story goes something like this. Late one evening, about 9:30 p.m. in September 2023, early springtime for us, Greg had gone outside and I went looking for him. It was a very clear, dark night, crisp air, and loads of stars. I walked towards the back of our property because I thought this is where Greg would be. Something caught my eye in the bushland adjacent to our property, and I called out to Greg to hurry quickly to have a look. My exact words to Greg were, "Look, it's a carousel! It's a carousel!" The words just came out. It's the first thing that came to my head. Now, what I saw looked nothing like a carousel. It looked more like a building with French windows that had light behind them, and you could see movement, and they glowed with a warm yellow light. But we could not see into the building. It was like the windows were opaque. Greg knew instinctively that when I yelled, "It's a carousel," that it was something that was not of this world.
He came running, and we both stood and looked at this thing just on the other side of our fence line. We stood there for quite some time, saying to each other, "Are you seeing that?" It just sat there in the bush, not moving, but with obscured movement inside it. Where it sat would have been in quite dense bushland. I've included a photo below. And it could not have sat flat on the ground, as it's a steep slope and about a 10-meter drop down to the creek below. The creek is covered in fallen trees and vines. After some time, which we had no idea how long we'd been standing there, we decided to walk closer to the structure. But as we moved closer, it seemed to move away and was always at the same distance. On the other side of the bushland, about 500 meters away, is a residential housing estate. We can't see the estate from our house because of the bushland and a hilly landscape, but if the structure moved as it appeared to, it would have been in the estate and we would not have been able to see it. Greg and I moved back to our original position and stood there and watched it some more. Now the strange thing is, neither of us remembers when we left and came inside, nor do we remember why we came inside. We don't know how much time passed, and we don't remember it disappearing. And we did not attempt at all to take photos or video of it. We think we may have just lost interest in standing there any longer and went inside. Yes, total apathy towards this weird thing in our backyard. We've talked about this event many, many times since. We have asked ourselves if we really saw it. Did we see the same thing? What do we think it was? Common sense, science, and all things logical say it could not have been there. It could not have been in that location. There were no broken branches, no marks on the ground, but we definitely 100% both saw it and both had the same experience. And we often go outside and stand in the same spot and look out into the bush. And both of us strongly feel that we do not want it to come back. So here is my little story. I have contemplated writing to you for a few years now, as I have had many experiences of some unusual occurrences, and I listen to your show and will say, "I've seen that," or "I've experienced that." But this one was witnessed by both of us, and we both know it to be true. If you want to chat further or know more, please reach out. I'd love to chat with you. We love your show and listen to every episode. Hopefully, you can come to Australia one day soon. It is a magical, ancient land, and we'd sure you'd love it. Best wishes, Fiona. The Unknown Beckons. We'll return its call after these messages.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything, and yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. 1 in 4 honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
And now, back to tonight's dead letter.
This story is pretty fascinating to me, Forrest. And of course, I always think about something that we've referenced frequently on the Dead Letter Office, as well as the main show, is the one encounter of the two little girls from Terry Lovelace's book about people had sent him stories once they heard his story. That's an abduction story. If you want to hear those episodes of our show, look for Abduction at Devil's Den and Devil's Den, The Reckoning are those series. But in the book, his book, there's, I think it's the fifth or sixth story in it. There's a really cool story about these two little girls that were at their farmhouse or their grandparents' farmhouse, and they went off to this berm that was in the back of the land, and they saw something that they described as like a carousel. But that one did have a lot more carousel-esque, to coin a phrase, features to it, designed to attract these kids. It led to a lifetime of strangeness for those girls, so there's some differences there. I think it's interesting how Fiona was like, that's just the first word that came to mind. But for her, it was like a building with French doors and opaque windows. Also, I love that she could see movement. That always freaks me out when people are like, no, I saw little dudes in the window. You know, that's like, what? It's not just a craft, because that takes you immediately out of that idea of, oh, this is a drone, or there's a gray in there, or there's something in a trance, or it's being remotely operated. When you see things walking around, suddenly you're sucked into like Steven Spielberg's world, you know?
Well, I think having now formulated or trying to over the years patterns and what's going on here, I think that that's a psychological phenomenon. I think when you first talked about ontological shock here, I've always said this, look, it's how people visualize or want to or can digest thinking about this, is that maybe there's craft flying around in the sky. Okay, but they're nuts and bolts. They come from a long ways away. And for a lot of folks, it's like, it's too far for them to get here because they're using the same technology we are, right? Well, no, maybe if they're already here, whatever they're doing is that's the nuts and bolts part of it. But we don't want to think about biologics.
Yeah.
NHIs, as they're popularly called now,
being
in the crap, because it's like, okay, I can deal with like things and maybe some kind of phenomenon that's just related to weather. I don't know what it is, but okay. Or maybe there's even like machines flying around in the sky, like the Booga sphere or the, whatever sphere it is that's landed. We're much more comfortable thinking it's just a machine and not wondering who made it and why it's there and where did it come from? So the next thing, though, is that there's occupants in there that you may have to deal with. And then the other level is of not wanting to think about it is, well, that's them coming out and interacting with us, messing with us somehow. For what purpose? And so that's what I would say is that we'll talk about a little bit about this, but I just finished watching Age of Disclosure. It was a very well done documentary. I liked seeing all of the folks that are in it. Finally talking about
including Terry Lovelace, who we just,
that's right. About. He has a brief cameo in there.
Terry's in
and
there.
So, but one thing that Terry experienced that's central to his story and a lot of other folks that was not mentioned, the interaction part, when they get to the section on possible motivations and reasons why aliens are interacting with us. And it went to, some very logical things we've all heard before. They want to monitor our military and nuclear capabilities, make sure we're not messing each other up. More importantly, not messing with them. It's like, look, you folks blow yourself up if you want, but once you're out here on the playground with us, the big boys, we're going to make sure you mind. And we're giving you a message that we can turn off your toys at any time we like. So is I think Hal Putoff says, you may think you can mess with us in the future, but you really can't. So it's that message, but it's never mentioned about the interaction and people being abducted. That whole abduction thing is another level that may be part of that undigestible quality of further disclosure. So getting back to this story, though, these things emerge, or at least with propulsion, and this is different perhaps. The way that all can happen is by utilizing and releasing such vast amounts of energy which I think is mentioned, Lou Elizondo says, the total energy output of the United States, a single craft in one motion or one event expending that amount of energy that the entire United States uses, I think, in a day, or maybe it's a year. I couldn't remember exactly. But
right.
You're talking about massive amounts of energy. And when that happens, you create a warp bubble. And everything in and around it, you're warping space-time, which is space and time. One of my most fascinating concepts that I mull over is people describing going into a very small craft. It's like, oh, it was like a football arena inside. We're just massive, like a massive warehouse, a massive Amazon warehouse inside this tiny craft. How does that happen? And I think it was Hal Putoff saying, well, when you're manipulating space and time, space is part of that. You can maybe adjust the amount of space that's in there physically. And my thought was like, well, I hope whatever machine is running to keep that going, that illusion going, doesn't suddenly quit, because then it's that crazy cartoon thing where it's like you have all this junk like in a giant warehouse now shrunk down to the size of a minivan. And are you crushed? What happens? Are you miniaturized as well? What happens in there?
Yeah, it's not good. You don't want it to be like what happened to the Titan submarine.
Right. There's some kind of weird, now you're talking about extreme physics again. Right. So getting back to what they saw, more so like a building, because I found it very curious as well that was the first thing that came out of her mouth. It's a carousel. And then also her husband instantly knowing that's not a carousel, even when he wasn't there, but he came running out like, no, he seemed to instantly know this is something otherworldly. But that's the first thing that came out of her mouth. It's like, it didn't look like that. That's also what's curious. Like, no, obviously it's nothing like a carousel, or not much like a carousel. It's more like a building with illuminated French windows. And then I picture the mansard roof, I think the whole French chateau kind of thing. But it's a different thing. So it's interesting that that's what's popped into her head. Was she made to think that? Or is our brain quickly, in a millisecond, filing through, like, what do we got here that's mundane? Well, a building's mundane, but we're going to go with carousel. Like, whatever decision process that is, it jumps to that. And then the other thing is how this thing appears to them. Is it warping space-time? Because the other thing that we were talking about just recently is that apparently the scuttlebutt is that there's pilots who are attempting to fly zero-point gravity craft. And because of the displacement of time and space, it really messes with the pilot's head, specifically in their perception of time passing. Obviously, time is a construct. Like, we experience time as a point of view. And it's nowhere else like that on any other planet or place, because we know that, like, if you have a larger planet, time passes differently. Or there's the time dilation theory that seems to be correct. That's been proven, I think, with atomic clocks placed on different locations at the top of a mountain and something at sea level. Time passes differently, even if it's just a micro fraction of a second. So is that what's happening here, where we don't really know how much time had passed? We don't remember doing some things or coming out to see it or really going back into the house, like why we were done, other than I guess we were tired of just staring at this building, which again was intriguing because it's not supposed to be there. One, not even the terrain would support it. It's hilly. There's a lot of brush. That's fascinating. There's a lot of different things going on here with just the mechanics, not even considering the purpose of it being there, if there is any purpose. So the other thing I was thinking about is that you have this thing kind of popping up there. Are they the only ones who can see it? But also we're talking about two people seeing the exact same thing. So it's not like somebody's having a hallucination. I don't go for that shared hallucination thing, unless it's something being forced on people through technology or some kind of psychic metaphysical power where that's being able to be done, because I do believe that that's possible. Is that what's happening here? Well, one aspect to consider is that, okay, if we break this down, one thing I found very interesting is that as they walk toward it, it's that phenomenon as well of it seeming to keep its same distance no matter where they went. Like if they walked out 50 meters and it's now at a distance that's the same, equidistant to them, it's the same. And now, since they walked out this further, this thing would actually have to be occupying the same space as the housing development that's across the ravine.
Right.
It's like, well, that doesn't make sense either. is this an illusion is what I'm getting at? Or did this thing pop up interdimensionally, causing a warp bubble, which is disturbing their memory, their sense of passage of time? That counts for the apathy, you know, the thinking that this thing is moving out. Because it also reminded me of two other occasions. One is we had talked about early on with Mark Brunoni, our friend, who when they lived in Woodstock, New York, very old yes. area, I believe it was Mark's mother who, when she'd be out gardening, said that there would be the image of a British redcoat soldier out of the corner of her eye.
That's right.
Wherever she looked, when she tried to look at it directly, it moved along with her, remaining in the periphery of her vision. It right. was always in the corner of her eye, no matter where she looked, but he was still there.
I think it's more our own perception of where that thing might exist than it is yeah. a technology.
But there's some kind of brain interaction here.
I think it's a brain machine interaction. In our capability. That's what I think it is as humans.
The other thing it reminded me of that scenario was when we covered Shades of Death Road. If you remember the guy going out at night fishing, he goes to that pond and he sees that a stranger at the edge of the pond. And as he approached, the stranger remained the same distance from him.
Yes.
Like he couldn't walk up on him. He keeps on walking, heading towards this strange figure of a man, I think. And he said at that point, like, it got ridiculous because then he would have had to have been standing in the middle of the pond.
Right.
Like, okay, this now right. that doesn't make any sense. He just keeps moving and now. Yeah. So what's going on there? It's obviously, is that thing really there? Well, I think something's there. And is it largely based on how your brain is interpreting what is impossibly there?
One thing I wanted to mention, and I think I maybe have said this once, at least once other time on our main show maybe, but there is a remote viewer who we don't know at all. We do know some, but this is not a person we know. And her name is Birdie Jaworski. Mm. Her real name is Prudence or Prue Calabresi. Mm. Don't think she even knows who we are, but mm-hmm. she has a YouTube channel called No Rivets. It's just N-O-R-I-V-E-T-S if you look mm-hmm. it up. And she does some really amazing remote viewing sessions. Now, if you're not on board with remote viewing, don't bother. It's not going to change your mind about it. Whatever. You're either believing it or you don't. But she did some sessions on one of my favorite UAP UFO images of all time, the Calvine photo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which you have seen mentioned in Moment of Contact, James Fox's movie about the Virginia incident. I have a print of it. It's now available publicly. Of course, I got like a secret print through back channels. And like Ooh. 2 weeks later, they're like, we're releasing it publicly. So now I think anybody can get the high resolution image and make their own print. But it's one of my favorite framed things that I have.
Yeah. Also Very shows cool up picture. Briefly in Age of Disclosure too. They just
Yes, that's right. That. They talk about it there. So just if you want to look it up, it's got an amazing backstory. Calvine Photo, C-A-L-V-I-N-E. But Birdie did a session on it on her YouTube channel, No Rivets, where she was trying to figure out what was going on with this craft, how it might operate and all of that. It is truly, talk about no rivets, her sub-logo is yet somehow riveting. I was riveted by the session she did trying to remote view the Calvine photo and the craft and its operator. And there's a lot of really fascinating stuff in there that relates very closely to the things you were just saying about space-time and how it might work and all the energy expended and all of that. But one of the things that I particularly remember was that for the being in the craft, which she felt like she was connecting with in a remote viewing kind of way, it's the moment of time that it was there, that it was present. I can't remember which way it went. It was either a couple of hours or it was just a few seconds, as opposed to the humans who were observing it and took the photo of it. It was a completely different timeline. Mm-hmm. And what she was saying, it was there because something had gone wrong. It was having an issue.
Oh.
And it was trying to fix it and it couldn't fix it. And she was explaining too how it was laying down almost like it was sandwiched. I remember this part. And forgive me if I'm getting this wrong if she ever hears this. You guys just needed to go check it out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this episode of the Dead Letter Office. But to me, it's like, you know how those, you remember, if you're old enough, you're not going to remember this if you're younger probably, but they used to have deck chairs at pools that were like made of thick rubber strings kind of, or thick rubber ropes. They were kind of elastic.
Are you talking about the ones that are, they're like vinyl hollow?
Yeah, vinyl.
Yeah, well, I still have
not
some.
Rubber.
Yeah,
It's almost like this thing, this creature that was controlling this thing was laying on something like that or sandwiched into like a narrow slot and like laying flat. And somehow its body was intertwined with the craft itself. And that was part of how it was controlled.
Okay. Now this is Birdie is viewing.
Saying is operating the craft in the Calvine photo.
That's fascinating. So what you're saying is that the pilot
Yeah.
The biologic, the NHI.
Yeah. And don't get hung up on the pool chair thing. I may have just made that up now, but what my idea was that it was squished. It was laying flat and kind of squished into the craft. Not like, you know, we think, oh, it's, we're in a chair, you know, fly to the navigator or the space shuttle or whatever. This thing is more kind of like, it's an extension of itself and it's laying in, it's an organic thing laying in it and controlling it with its mind as well as, you know, maybe physically.
Yeah. I love that you meld into the machinery itself.
And And I, you know, the thing that I really latched onto when you were talking about the space-time part of it, which I'm leaning more and more towards these days, was this particular, in the case of this remote viewing that Birdie was doing, she saw it as, first of all, being kind of panicked in the Calvine photo. And I want to do a whole, we'll just do an episode on the Calvine photo.
Yeah, okay.
I really want to anyway.
I'm down.
But like, that it's panicked. But the other thing I remember was that the passage of time in the craft did not match the passage of time on Earth. So that's one thing that I think might connect back to a sighting or an event like this one for Fiona and Greg. Now, the other thing that I would say is interesting here is the idea that you can't get closer to it. And this is something I wanted to think about. And I meant to bring this up. God, when we talked about the Skoll experiment, I don't think I managed to get it in there. But when they talked about one of the things that happened during that, and that was a series we did in the main show just very recently, one of the things that happened was there was a crystal and that they tried to pick the crystal up and it wasn't there.
Right.
Their hands would just pass through it. And so that made me think about, there's a magic trick. I think it's called the magic eye or something like that. But you can buy this at a run-of-the-mill magic shop. It's a little saucer-shaped thing that has two parabolic mirrors sandwiched together. And on the top, there's a hole. And whatever you set down inside of it, at the bottom of the bottom parabolic mirror, appears to be floating above the two sandwich things. It looks like it's up there on the top and you go to grab it and it's not there.
Right.
It's a very standard illusion, but it takes two parabolic dishes focused at each other to create the illusion. So when I thought, oh, well, this whole experiment, when everybody was talking about, oh, it's a bunch of magic tricks, maybe somebody figured it out and they somehow did the magic eye thing with the crystal that they could see, but not touch.
Right.
So it's an argument I should have made during that series and didn't. So now I'm putting it out there.
Are you saying that as a way to debunk?
Trick people. Yeah, to hoax people. To hoax something like that. But this is the reason I'm circling back to this, is when it comes to the red coat that Mark's mother saw in Woodstock, or it comes to this craft, or it comes to the fishermen out in the pond, when you think about, like, why is this thing not getting any closer? Why can't I get any closer to it? To me, it reminds me of refraction, right? So it reminds me very much of the difference between where the thing is at the bottom of the pool when you look at it from above the pool and where it looks like it is when your head is underwater, if you can open your eyes underwater and see it. Or you, even if you're wearing goggles or you're snorkeling. The difference between where the actual object is in the unobstructed, when the light is unobstructed by water, is maybe similar to this. So I guess what I'm saying is it could be an indication, the fact that you can't get closer to it and you shift positions and it's moving all around and you can't quite get to it could be a symptom of an interdimensional existence that we can't quite understand because it's not all the way here. We're looking at it through the lens of another dimension. And so as a result, visibly, it's not really that it's moving in a parallax error kind of way by how we move, because it's not really physically in that exact spot. It's peeking in or bleeding through from somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's just my theory on that. So I wanted to say that. But then the other thing you mentioned, like the ground was uneven. It is described as like a cliff with a creek at the bottom covered in vines.
Right.
So that is just to give a little more dimension to the idea of, well, you know, somebody put a UFO on a stick and whatever, or it's like it's an actual physical building, or there was no way something could be there based on their description of the earth below it. And they can't even walk down to that area because it's so steep. So there's that too. But I guess the more I think about the time warp and the space and the Calvine photo and Birdie's remote viewing take on that and the time changing and how often time is a part of all the stories that seem legitimate. In every single case, whether it's an abduction, an encounter, people seeing something, the time thing comes up all the time.
Yeah.
No pun intended. And in this case, I don't think she blatantly said it, but they do seem to have maybe missing time. She doesn't know how long they were there or when they left, and they don't remember it leaving.
Right.
Which to me, could their minds be wiped? Is there a screen memory over whatever a series of events unfolded there. The other thing I would ask Fiona and Greg is, do they think there was any chance that they were taken aboard or that they communed with something unusual that they can't remember?
Yeah.
And I think some folks, when they send us stories, they get nervous when they hear the idea of that, which I don't blame. So if you don't want to explore it, don't explore it. Especially if you haven't had any kind of ongoing trauma or significant changes in your life, which I think is pursuant a lot of times to a more direct encounter, where you're just like, you know what, a lot of all of these things have been different since that day.
Yeah.
Then, you know, but in the other cases, maybe you do want to explore that, which I think the only way to explore it is through hypnotherapy, which is controversial and all that kind of thing. But I would be curious to know if they thought they'd seen anything else. And my thing is just the idea that, I mean, we talked about Melbourne earlier at the beginning of the show, and they're not exactly in that area.
Yeah.
But they're not far. And as they said, they're about, what did they say? 90 minutes. I think 90 minutes south of there, which is going down towards Wilson's Prom, which is, again, looks like an amazing place. So they're somewhere in that region, but they are not far as the crow or the UFO flies from Moorabbin. And I don't remember how to say that properly, where Valenta took off from and disappeared. So I see something and then never came back. So in this area, which is the Bass Strait, is known for additional intense sightings. I'm pretty sure, wasn't it the Bass Strait where the person got the photo out the plane of the lights going crazy? Wasn't that there too? I feel like it was. Where they made like squiggly lines, like if you shook a camera while you were filming a Christmas light. But
I think so, because there were other things that notably that went on. Yeah, with Frederick Valentich's experience. Remember, there's a photographer, pro-am, kind of on the beach taking a photo, and he photographed something that was like a blob that was off-gassing when you look at it with other filters.
That's different from the thing I'm thinking about, but I remember that too. Yeah,
no, I remember what you're talking about here. There were other things that were going on, you know, around, you know, again, the circling lights.
Yeah, I feel like somebody was in a research aircraft or something and they saw lights out the window and then they took pictures and the camera was relatively stable.
Yeah.
And it's like in a single frame, the light made a bunch of very crazy, squiggly, cursive looking movements in one frame. I think that was there, but I'm not positive.
Perhaps whatever craft these are, and again, we've often talked about this, like the idea of the internal combustion engine, but there are different designs. What do we have now? Yeah. Electric cars, different, same idea. The car goes down the road, totally different type of motor and different form of propulsion, but you're still achieving the same thing from the viewer off on the shoulder of the road. The car goes down the road.
That's true.
Sometimes people hear noises, like as with a noisy internal combustion engine vehicle. And then sometimes you don't hear much, like with an electric car. Same thing that people are describing with seeing different UFOs, like this thing was totally silent. Or no, this thing was making a low-pitched hum.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about here is like, you're looking at something that is affecting the space-time around it as a way of propelling itself, which is how it achieves all these incredible things. And then when you're talking about, what does that do to the person in their experience? Like, what's happening here? Well, I think now maybe finally we're narrowing it down that there is something that happens to the physics which allows this incredible travel, and that you don't get squished like a bug making a 90-degree turn. And, you know, what we're talking about now is that, okay, what are they seeing? So this thing, again, didn't look like a craft. It looks like a building with windows that's recognizable. And it's, you're getting back to the Woody Derenberger thing. Is this thing actually a rickety old rusty lantern type thing that's hovering above the ground? That sounds like a much more...
Or is it presenting itself in a way that I can
understand? In a way that Woody can understand. Like,
or is my mind just trying to grasp
what
it is and putting those filters on it? Is it is it me, the human, putting those filters of understanding on whatever is actually?
Yeah, and that sounded like a much more, in that type of realm, even a conventional type of craft. And then you have ones that seem like a hybrid, Merkaba or Merkaba UFOs, which are half biological. They're an entity unto themselves, where they're a being or a machine intelligence or sentient in some way. And that's the machine, but they also have pilots in them or whatever it is. What is this building doing there? Why did it show up?
And they didn't see it arrive or depart. That's the other thing.
No, they knew to come outside. Yeah. And so there's something that there's a kind of a draw there, I guess is what I'm saying, but it could be unintentional in that you're drawn to something again, that's outside of our reality. And you're naturally curious about it. And the curiosity is almost...
Or were they both called out there?
And to deal with it, they're both being presented with a picture of a building, which seems innocuous. But yeah, it's like, you know, when you're talking about the warping and, you know, the interaction with your brain, is that something that's happening? And then what's the point or purpose of this in to get them out there? And then you don't remember. So like I said, I think there are several things going on. One could be tied to just how the craft operates. Like, well, when you get close to this thing, you're going to have some physical effects and they're going to be unpleasant. And there may be some confusion about time. What they knew without knowing consciously, totally, was that they did not want this thing to return. So what's going on there where it's like, okay, that's a weird, cool kind of thing. Because we've heard other stories like, oh man, I wish that thing would come back. And then there's others like, no, that was enough. I don't want to ever see this thing again.
Even if I don't remember anything strange, right, I'm good. Which, you know, for me, I would be like, well, I would want to explore that further.
There could be multiple explanations. And I think the psychology of our tiny brains is that we want one explanation that covers everything. Like, okay, that's what's happening. Your brain's just, it's short circuiting. That's what's happening to everybody. There are no aliens. It's not a big deal. We understand it and we'll understand it more in the future. Because I wonder about all these other time slips. Is that some other phenomenon? Like, again, that was a Jim Harold campfire story. Guy who had bought a movie ticket to go in to see Hellboy. And he goes in and he says, well, this is weird. This just seems like ending credits. And he doesn't remember seeing the movie at all. Remember seeing, like you said, he thought it was just, is this the ending of the previous movie? Like I did here too early. Like, what's going on? He just remembers like, well, this movie seems to be over and like, that's it. And then the lights come up and and he asks the ticket taker, like, hey, do you remember me? He's like, yeah, you came in here about 2 hours ago,
yeah,
2.5 hours ago, but just no memory. Did something happen? Like I said, is that another effect? Is there a time slip proper happening there? Or was there just some natural phenomenon that disrupted the space-time continuum, had a bit of a warp bubble around him? Or did something happen to him that was interactive that targeted him specifically? That's right. What I'm wondering here. You know, did the appearance of this thing kind of warp space-time, and so you have all these other effects? The apathy, not really caring to see too much more about that, and that's just a side effect? Or did you go and live
10 years on another planet and come back and can't remember it?
Well, that's the thing, is that you could have, you know, with all these other time dilation kind of phenomenon people are claiming, you could have all these other experiences and your perception of time is completely different. And we were just talking about this, I think, in another DLO, or perhaps the main episode here, where I was talking about an Instagram clip where somebody was saying that it was somebody in the know that aliens don't experience time like we do. I mean, they're much, much longer lifespans. Some could be, a couple hundred years old. And the way that they were describing it to their human counterparts is that, you know, time here on Earth and us humans are meant to experience time in a very specific way, linearly, you know, birth, life, and then death. Everything's on a timeline because that's how we're meant to experience it, but also that's how the only way we're capable of experiencing it. Whereas other alien life forms experience time more so as events. Like they don't, it is one long now. And it's more, I guess, Buddhist, where, you know, there's no beginning, middle, or end. It's just happening. It's all now.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to wrap our heads around that.
I don't know what happened here, Fiona. I hope if you can find that, the drawing that you're going to attach to the original email and send that, that would be great. Sorry, it took us 2 years to get back to you, but please send that in. I'll keep trying to email you. We'd love to see more and also know if anything else has happened since then. We hope to make it to Australia one day. It looks like a truly beautiful part of the country that you're in, and it is an ancient and magical place. Anyway, until then, you and Greg keep looking out for each other, and thank you for sending your letter in to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer. It's a diagnosis that changes everything, and yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When Kohler, the global design leader in luxurious kitchen and bath products, came to me and said, "Martha, we need an ambassador for our timeless, elegant, durable cast iron products." I said, "I'm in. Now let me see the factory." Weeks later, I was suited up in coveralls and work boots, walking through their Kohler, Wisconsin cast iron foundry. I stood next to the molten iron furnace, saw the hand applying enamel, and touched the gorgeous finished products waiting to be sent out into the world. Since 1883, Kohler cast iron products have been forged and finished by the incredible craftspeople right in Kohler, Wisconsin. I'll tell you, I gained a newfound respect and appreciation for Kohler's cast iron craftsmanship. So now, I'm lending my discerning stamp of approval to my most beloved Kohler cast iron products for their durability, beauty, and timelessness. Shop my Kohler cast iron favorites curated on Kohler.com. Bring the warmth, character, and enduring style of these timeless products into your kitchens and bathrooms. As the Kohler Cast Iron Ambassador, I say, long live cast iron.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Bethany Frankel here from Just Be with Bethany Frankel, and I am just going to say it. The drinks aisle needs an intervention. Too many bottles and cans, all promising health and wellness, but after a glug, you just shrug and you still feel out of sync. Then there's Synergy Kombucha, the real kombucha, the real deal, made the right way for real benefits and real results you can see and feel. I love it. Synergy supports your mind and body through your gut with 9 billion living probiotics in refreshing flavors you will live for. Synergy makes kombucha with a superior craft fermentation process that delivers a delicious taste and all those probiotics. They're the good bacteria that support your body, mind, and even your skin. You're welcome. Because when your microbiome is in balance, you're back in sync and back in charge. That is what you get when your kombucha is made the right way. Don't chase fads. Don't fall for modern soda hype. Choose standards. DM at Synergy Kombucha on Instagram with the code THEREALKOMBUCHA to get a free bottle while supplies last. Synergy, the kombucha with standards.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the Million Dollar Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply. It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
When Kohler, global design leader in luxurious kitchen and bath products, asked me to be their ambassador for timeless, elegant, durable cast iron, I said, I'm in. Soon after, I was in their Kohler, Wisconsin foundry, watching molten iron poured, enamel applied by hand, and the beautiful finished pieces ready to ship. Since 1883, Kohler cast iron has been crafted by incredible artisans, and seeing it firsthand gave me a whole new appreciation for their craftsmanship. Now, I'm proud to lend my stamp of approval to my favorite Kohler cast iron products for their durability, beauty, and enduring style. Shop my curated picks at Kohler.com. As the Kohler cast iron ambassador, I say, long live cast iron.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.